your CGH About Your Health radio program. And this morning we have Dr. Paul Steinke in studio. Of course, we're maintaining safe distance as well, a little social distancing. Of course, Dr. Steinke is president and CEO of CGH Medical Center. Today, we're talking about the coronavirus, what's happening at CGH, and hopefully answer some of your questions. And welcome those on CGH Facebook as well. Good morning, Doctor. Good to see you again.
Morning, Tom. How are you?
Very well, and feeling good, and hope all is well with you.
We're having interesting times.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And well, one of the things that always rises to the top right now is the COVID-19 coronavirus. Could you tell us a little bit more about it in case we haven't heard what is currently out, and what are some of the symptoms?
Sure. It seems like a long time ago now, but it actually all started back late December, December 31st. I first identified in China, and we first took notice of it as it spread through that country, and our own CDC here started paying attention to it in January. For us locally, we began educating and sharing information with our medical staff in January. We began asking travel screening questions in February of anybody who came into any of our facilities. It was at that time that we started to wonder if it was going to be here and how we were going to deal with it. So we have been in the midst of planning. The biggest concern is overflow of patients and how to handle that volume. So those things started happen in earnest really in late February, early March. So that's what we've been trying to prepare for. So symptoms of COVID, anybody who's been paying attention probably has heard these things before, but fevers, fatigue, chills, shortness of breath, cough, sore throat. A newer one that seems to have surfaced is the inability to smell things. So some GI symptoms. I know the run on toilet paper happened early on. I'm not sure that that's a hallmark symptom, but it's really more of a lower respiratory infection.
Now, we have allergy season quickly approaching, and as things are greening up, and people are going to start to notice maybe similarly, they're going to be sneezing, have runny nose, or maybe we could pop into some influenza leftover. That might be going around for several months yet. How do you tell the difference going into allergy season?
That's a good question. Anytime you have upper respiratory symptoms, you have to go through a sort of a self-check. Allergies would be something that you might get a runny nose or a sneeze or a cough from. But generally, there's no fever that comes with it. It's something that people can say, yep, I get this every year when the ragweed comes out and I just have a runny nose. It's clear. COVID infections and influenza and other things that would be more serious are generally accompanied by fevers, more lower respiratory symptoms, so a productive cough, fatigue, extreme shortness of breath. So a little bit more than just your dripping nose that might come from seasonal allergies.
So if somebody has allergies and they take what they normally take and their symptoms don't decrease, that might be an indicator?
Perhaps, but again, you got to take the entire picture into it. So if it's just the runny nose and the postnasal drainage and symptoms are relatively mild, it's what people have experienced in the past, I would probably put that in the seasonal allergy category. Influenza and the coronavirus infections would be far more to it. So,
again, this is CGH About Your Health radio program. We're in the studio with Dr. Paul Steinke. Certainly, thank you for stopping in. Who are the most vulnerable right now?
Well, again, a lot of this information is changing. We know that if you're over the age of 65, if you've got some other chronic medical problems, like heart disease, lung disease, diabetes, if you're being treated for cancer, anything that might have be taken away your body's ability to fight off infection, that can make you more susceptible to it. So it really comes down to your immune response. The category that doesn't get talked about a lot is if you're on an autoimmune drug that knocks out some of your immune function, that would make you in a higher risk category.
What would somebody, what would be an example of an autoimmune?
So if you got rheumatoid arthritis, anything like that where you're on an immune modulating drug that tries to turn off portions of your immune system may make you more susceptible to the infection.
And if somebody has maybe some already existing lung issues, what would they be watching for?
So commonly, people have COPD or chronic emphysema, chronic bronchitis. Those individuals generally have a cough on most days. They generally have congestion. They might have some wheeziness. So what they would be looking for would be something that's just out of character to what their normal daily symptoms are. And that would be more cause for concern.
So if I'm sick and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I might have this thing, I'm showing all the symptoms, what's the best thing for me to do?
So the numbers are starting to pan out in this country too, but thankfully we know that roughly 80% of the people that end up with coronavirus infection thankfully have a very mild form of it. And if you have mild to moderate symptoms, the current recommendations are that you stay home. Do the things that mom always told you to do. Get your rest, push your fluids, eat well. And we know in the vast majority of the time, patients with mild to moderate symptoms, they recover fully and nicely at home.
Now, couldn't I just get tested?
So it's been one of the more frustrating things. You may be seeing some local options to get tested in a so-called drive-through fashion. We're finding that is not the recommendations, not the current recommendations, and in fact, it's a bit irresponsible to even be offering it. What has started out as drive-through testing, early on, the tests were not readily available, and they currently are working on that problem. But when we test because people are curious or they have mild to moderate symptoms, what happens is those tests can clog up the testing system and it delays results. Early on, we could get test results back in about 24 hours. Some of the private labs, 3 to 4 days. Now we're at the point where we're getting test results in 3-4 days, sometimes as long as 10 or 12 days. And that's a result of testing irresponsibly. And so what happens is people that are seriously ill and need to be hospitalized, those are the folks that actually need to be tested. And our lab turnaround times now have grown. And so what happens is those patients that are seriously ill, we are waiting to find out whether or not they are sick. And it affects our treatment of them, and it also puts our workers, our caretakers of them, in jeopardy. So we are not recommending routine testing for mild to moderate symptoms.
Now, if I'm not feeling the best and maybe I've got a general illness or do need to be seen, can I still see my doctor?
At this point, if you're concerned about coronavirus, we're recommending that you actually call your doctor's office. It's different than what I've been used to. My years of being in practice, if somebody called and said they were concerned about how they were feeling, and our response was, come on in and we'll take a look at you. This is a little bit different. We're not recommending that people just stop by. We're recommending that you call. And the reason for that is, if you call the doctor's office, a nurse will talk to you, ask you some questions about your symptoms. If the symptoms are mild to moderate, we give some advice, and it really comes down to staying at home, and things should get better. What we really are asking people not to do, again, this is with mild to moderate symptoms, is not to just come to the doctor's office or go to the hospital, because generally your treatment isn't going to be any different than if you stay home. Now, severe symptoms are a different thing altogether. If you feel like your symptoms are severe enough and you feel sick enough that you may potentially need to be in the hospital, then we are telling you to come to the emergency department and be evaluated. So things that would be severe enough, very, very high fevers associated with worsening cough to the point where you have concerns about whether you're going to be able to keep up your oxygen, severe fatigue where you have trouble getting out of bed, something that is very clearly more severe than something that you feel like you can just recover at home.
Now, outside of maybe suspecting that I might have COVID-19, or let's say I have another emergency, can I still go to the ER?
Well, that's important. While we're recommending, we're giving advice on what to do with respiratory infections, it is easy to ignore everything else, and we don't want people to do that. If you're having chest pains and you're concerned about a heart attack or any of the other things that we take care of beyond COVID, coronavirus, influenza, or other respiratory problems, we absolutely want you to call us. If it's severe enough, we want you to come to the emergency department. So please do not ignore those other things. They're more likely to have those things going on than the coronavirus.
Once again, this is a CGH About Your Health radio program. We're in studio with Dr. Paul Steinke. He is president and CEO of CGH Medical Center. Well, this has obviously been going on for a little while now, and it's been just over a week since we had one positive case in Whiteside County. What has CGH done, and what are you currently doing to prepare for maybe an extension of the pandemic?
Yeah, for us in Whiteside County, it's changed in the fact that we've gotten a case. This was a patient that was not in our facility, but was tested and identified as to be positive in Whiteside County. So that put some things in motion for us as an organization to get ourselves ready for a larger influx. So as a result of that, we've cut back our workforce to the absolute essential clinical folks. I don't want to call any of our employees non-essential, but our focus has been on taking care of the potential for an influx of coronavirus patients. So we've done some things that have maybe seemed a little bit over the top, but we're concerned about where this may go. We value our auxiliary and our volunteers. We, unfortunately, they're in an age group generally that they're at high risk, so we asked our volunteers to stop coming in. We have imposed some tighter restrictions on our visitors. Visitors are not allowed unless you have special circumstances like childbirth or if it's an end-of-life situation, but visitors are restricted. We've canceled all of our elective surgeries, so it's hard if you've been waiting for a cataract to be done or a hip to be replaced. We've had to unfortunately push that off. But these are all things that we've put in place to try to prepare for and cut back on the infections. Hospital, I feel safe going around the hospital, more so than maybe the grocery store. We screen everybody that comes in the door. We take their temperature and ask them some symptom questions. And so we're doing all the appropriate things that we feel like we need to do to protect our employees and our patients at the hospital.
Tough question. How long do you think this will go on?
Yeah, that is the tough question. There are some things on the horizon that I think give us some hope. The hardest thing right now is that we don't have readily available COVID-19 testing. I think that will change everything, and I think it's just on the horizon. We'll start to get rapid COVID testing where we can get results back in half hour, 40 minutes. The other thing is the PPE, the so-called personal protective equipment with the masks that everybody talks about. Once those things become readily available and we have rapid testing, it'll give us a different way that we will be managing the concerned groups that come in, and so we'll start turning things back on. I think in the next month, hopefully a bit less than that, we'll start to see some progress on those two fronts, and that will change how long we have to hunker down.
Now, a lot of people, they might be saying, oh my gosh, what can I do? What can I do? Am I helpless? No, I'm not. I can do things. What can the community do to help?
Well, the most important thing is, and it sounds redundant, but it's important. If we ask people to shelter in place and they don't, then this just extends it more. So if you are healthy and you're able, stay home. Stay home. Beyond that, we have asked the community for some things supply-wise. We've had some donations, which have been very helpful. Some NIOSH-approved N95 masks. Some people have donated some protective wear. We've worked with some local businesses. Actually, there's a business in town with a good engineering group that has helped actually manufacture some face shield protectants. So we appreciate those donations and have worked locally with some people. Another area that has gotten an unintended consequence is the blood supply is a bit on the low side. As blood drives have gotten canceled, it puts our blood supply in jeopardy. We are certainly, as we sit here today, in good shape, but I want to highlight that we do have a blood drive planned for Thursday, April 2nd from 9:30 to 7 p.m. It's a bit different in the sense that we won't accept walk-ins, and we've got some limitations on who can donate, but I've got a couple of people, if people want to check on this, Connie, 815-625-0400, extension 5425, or Michelle at extension 6879 can give us some information on the blood drive, but we still need to take care of everything else that we do.
So that blood drive, that's just a week from today.
That's right.
And people can start getting information about that and signing up for that as we get closer.
Yes.
You've had to make a couple of adjustments. You have temporary clinic closures, and you've had to kind of consolidate a few places in the area specific to Fulton, Provincetown, Mount Carroll, and Milledgeville.
So as we have, again, shut down our elective surgical procedures, we also have shut down elective visits. We really very at-risk age groups or at-risk illnesses, chronic illnesses. We've canceled a lot of those appointments, which meant that we had to close down and consolidate some of those outlying clinics on a temporary basis. So, like you just mentioned, those clinics are consolidated into the Morrison Clinic or the Polo Clinic.
I think that was a good move as well. And the staff that were at the other clinics, they just all kind of get together at the ones that are now available.
That's what we've been trying to do, yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, Doctor, anything else that our listeners and our people joined in on Facebook should know?
Sure. Well, I just want to first of all, send out a big thank you to the community. Lots of support. And it's felt, I think, sometimes in these kind of moments, we are at our best, and that certainly is on display. I want to thank our employees, our doctors, our nurses, our CNAs, our rad techs, our phlebotomists, everybody that keeps all of our operations going, including our housekeepers and our plant operations guys. All those things are still going on to make sure that we are available and ready should this grow beyond just the one case. So I want to thank all of our employees for making it all happen.
Dr. Paul Stanky, thank you for coming in this morning. It's always good to see you, and glad you were able to pop in today.
Thanks, Tom. Appreciate it.
CGH About Your Health radio program. For the most up-to-date information, please visit cghmc.com/COVID-19, or you can follow CGH Medical Center on Facebook as well. Again, thank you so much, Doctor.
Thanks, Tom.